Good morning, and welcome back to Excerpts from the ABBA Archives, the podcast that's not about ABBA, it's about us. My name is A. Kirby, and with me as always is...
B. Peterson. Let's start with birth. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Glazer's 2004 picture starring Nicole Kidman. Mm.
Recommended to us by my grandfather.
Which your uncle... correctly found amusing that a recently turned 92-year-old man would recommend to two kids in their 20s birth. What is the premise of the film?
Well, so a woman about to be remarried after 10 years after the death of her husband. Mm-hmm. Finds a kid claiming to be her husband reincarnated who tells her, don't marry your fiancé, I'm your husband, be with me. And she has to deal with that. And he seems to know, like, a strange amount of stuff about their life together. And so she kind of starts getting convinced.
Yeah. Right off the bat, this movie is shot and edited and scored immaculately. It is gorgeous. Sumptuous production. There are several scenes where my eyes are locked to the screen. Nicole Kidman's close-up at the theater comes to mind. Mm. Just fantastic in terms of a production.
Yeah.
That said, weird take. Weird approach to the material.
Yeah.
I still haven't reviewed this one on Letterboxd because I don't know whether to give it 1.5 stars or 4.5 stars. Like, it's somewhere in there. Yeah, when the bathtub scene came around, we were just like, Hold up.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah. I'm tempted to say that it works.
Yeah.
But only tempted.
Yeah.
Not convinced.
I like it more when she's not quite convinced yet. And because it holds me more when she's not quite convinced and we're like wondering what's going on.
There's a lot of ambiguity up until the final third. At which point it is revealed. There is an explanation given that allows for the possibility of not reincarnation, it not being reincarnation.
It's just an
and this is happening at the same time that Nicole Kidman is convinced. So in the final third, all ambiguity is robbed from the audience and from our lead.
Yeah, and it goes from being kind of, this kid chasing this woman who's really doubtful, but maybe a little hopeful, but really doubtful, to being a movie about this woman chasing a kid.
Yeah, wanting to run off with a child.
Yeah.
I think it's a better treatise on grief than it is on love. a good double feature with all of us strangers. Yes. Better at dealing with grief than dealing with love.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen the B movie in a while. Like, I saw that when I was a kid.
A double feature of Jonathan Glazer's Birth and Jerry Seinfeld's The Bee Movie.
I haven't seen it since I was a very small child, but I remember the premise. And I know the meme of, like, the guy whose wife leaves him for a bee.
Yeah.
And at least in my memory, that character feels the same as the husband in this movie. Where he's just going like what?
This bee.
This is literally a child. Why am I competing with this?
Yeah. No, that's a fantastic double feature. I hope that I simultaneously hope that we are and are not the first people to make that comparison. And,
yeah.
And by we, I mean you, because you made it. I could not have pulled that, but the beautiful, that is a beautiful work of criticism right there.
Oh, thanks.
Wow. Yep. Okay. Yeah, so it's about as weird as the Bee Movie.
Yeah.
And some people argue it's a work of genius, and some people say it's bonkers, stupid, terrible. And one cannot fault anyone for coming to the conclusion that they come to. I would argue that this one's a little bit better produced than the Bee Movie, a little bit better acted.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on. We did go to your grandfather's
mm-hmm.
for his 92nd birthday
mm-hmm.
and brought a ton of DVDs and Blu-rays for him to choose from for what he wanted to watch. Because he had been admiring our wall and was like, you should show me some of these movies that I've never seen before. And he picked out for us to watch Your Christmas Gift from mm-hmm. my mom.
Thank you so much.
Kiss the Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
So... tell me about Kiss the Spider-Woman.
Yeah, this is a movie that I watched early in high school, I think. Got it from the EOU library, which like my dad and I used to go just like walk up the hill and go just like grab a haul of movies and come back.
Mm.
And this is a movie about two people in prison, pretty much. One is, I think as you put it, a queer fascist, and the other is a bigoted revolutionary.
A bigoted, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in Brazil.
Mm.
Though one could be forgiven for not knowing that
mm.
and for not knowing... yeah, because this is a very... we are in a general place during a general time with general characters talking about general ideas.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I do find Kiss the Spider-Woman to be kind of broad, the movie.
Right, right. For me, watching this one early in high school, I think this was, like, one of the first movies where I had that moment of, oh, you can do that.
Yes.
In terms of, like, what a story does,
mm-hmm.
how it's, yeah, how a location works, how...
dog just absolute downing my hair.
just like spaghetti. Just
yep.
Just like, I don't know. It's probably like one of the first independent films I saw,
mm-hmm.
and it's also like one of the films that was more like an art house film that was more recent. Like I'm more familiar with like to a certain extent with like 30s, 40s horror,
sure.
or like some silent film, or like some like older movies. But I'm not really familiar with film, and especially like art house film after like, you know, like the 80s.
Sure.
So this was new. It was art house. And it was two people talking to each other
mm-hmm.
in prison for almost all of the movie.
Yeah.
And bonus, it was queer, and I had, you know, probably just come out like 1 to 2 years prior to seeing this, so this was like one of the first queer movies I saw.
Sure. Now, if I saw this movie for the first time when I was 16, it would probably be one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. It reminds me a lot of 12 Angry Men.
Mm-hmm.
In that, let's just put a lot of archetypes in a room together and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 12 Angry Men is one of my favorite films. Kiss of the Spider-Woman is one of yours. I can respect Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But watching it for the first time after having seen a lot more... What do they say? Universality is found in specificity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there to make this feel more universal, it needed a bit more specificity. As it stands, it feels like I said, like some, it, we have a lot of broad, we have broad archetypes in a broad setting that's like very deliberately not espousing any specific policy. They talk a lot about the struggle against what by what? There's it. They don't say. It's very vague. We know that it's probably like a fascist authoritarian state, but that's about all we know.
We know it's one that is willing to torture people to get information about the revolution.
Right, which narrows it down to no narrowing down.
No.
All authoritarian states do that.
Yeah.
There's no parties indicted. There's no names of organizations. The only specific thing we have is the Nazis and the French Resistance in this movie that William Hurt relates, that he narrates from memory. I think a lot of the language around the queerness is very much dated.
Yes.
Is this character gay? Are they trans? Like it is very much in, it feels like straight people's understanding of queerness.
Yeah, I found that a lot more on this viewing, you know, and of course I've seen a lot more queer cinema and had a lot more, like, engaged a lot more in queer culture.
You just know a lot more queer people. Yeah.
So like none of that registered to me, I think, when I saw it the first time.
Sure.
But yeah, that did stand out to me. And it's not like, I don't know, like, and it doesn't feel even like, identity is complex. It just feels like we don't know what this person is.
Yeah, again, vague.
Yeah.
I feel like I've just come out kind of bashy this movie. Hmm. I guess it might have little bit been that it was built up a lot by you.
Well, yeah.
You'd been hyping it up for several months, and then I saw it, and I was like, ah, yes, it's a decent a starting point for independent film and queer cinema. Hmm. I think it's a great starting point. It is not the end-all be-all of these genres. My favorite bit of the film is when it gets out of the single location, when it gets out of the cell, when the people leave and then have to live their lives. That I think was the more complex, ambiguous element. I love a movie with an absolutely miserable ending like that. Like, okay, hold on. I didn't like All of Us Strangers. This feels miserable in the classic sense. Mm. In the, this is a grand tale of tragedy, you know? Where All of Us Strangers, again, wasn't a tragedy for the first 95% of the movie and then was for the last 5%. That's why it doesn't work. Anyway. I need to stop talking about All of Us Strangers. I've literally written a letter and sent it to dozens of people airing my grievances with All of Us Strangers. I need to let it go. Mm. It's just so well shot and edited and acted and all the stuff. And then why the last one was Andrew Haig? I need to stop. I'm sorry. Thank you for introducing me to this film. William Hurt does give a very good performance. I think Raul Julia gives the better performance out of the two. It was fun when they were like, oh, let's
kind of nice that it's the story of the queer person in love with the straight person, but who, I don't know, gets
the girl.
Yeah. Yeah. Who gets the, I don't know, I feel like we get the emotional satisfaction as the audience of, like, it's not that Raul Julia, you know, isn't affectionate towards this person.
Yeah.
It's that circumstances aren't accommodating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like how it uses the parallels between the films that are being talked about, the Nazi propaganda film.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the real world.
Mm-hmm.
That, I don't know, the person who loves all these movies or loves this movie gets to I don't know, be that character in a sense, you know, gets to have that romantic tragedy that they so liked in the film. I do like the kind of conflict of the person I don't know, who admires this world that they can't be in, if that makes sense. That, like, the
well, they queer both who, do that.
Yeah, and
because Raul Julia ultimately wants to be with Marta.
Yeah.
Not his revolutionary girlfriend, but with the bourgeois woman that he loves.
Yeah. And that there's this kind of, I don't know, internal conflict. And
yeah, there's this aspect of shame about what you love.
Yeah, and you know, the queer who likes the Nazi propaganda film.
Yeah.
You know, and the Nazis, you know, don't like queer people.
No, they exterminated them.
So
when possible.
This is not a fantasy that this person, I don't know. This is not a fantasy that includes this person.
Yeah.
But they're having it anyway.
Yeah, I really liked the bit at the beginning of the film where William Hurt was describing this movie, this propaganda film. And he talks about the people who are definitely not French.
Mm.
And the way that... The use of language to obscure the use of vague language to obscure bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
It's dog whistles and stuff like that, and how Raul Julia calls him out for that is like how, yeah, bigoted people hide behind vague language.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right.
Oh,
you're so
cute, puppy. Just a fuzzy little bean.
Just a fuzzy little bean. Fuzzy little chompy little bean. I'm gonna bite you.
Yeah, coming after me.
Mm-hmm. Third film.
Mm-hmm.
A film that has been recommended to me many, 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 many times. A film that has been requested. One of us has requested to watch together many, 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 many times.
Mm-hmm.
A film that the other one of us has declined politely, impolitely, many, 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 many times.
To the point where it's been a running joke.
It's a running joke that you want to watch this movie
and
that I do not.
Yes.
because I was burned on It Happened One Night. I was burned on Arsenic and Old Lace.
Hmm.
I don't think I'll ever really be in the mood for The Philadelphia Story. But dang it, we ended up watching it the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And dang it, the second half's pretty good. So tell me about The Philadelphia Story.
Yeah. This was one that we had on the wall for many years and I like didn't see until probably the last few.
VHS.
VHS. Rom-com, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, Jimmy Stewart. And it's, I don't know, a very comfortable film for me. I love all of their performances. I really like all three actors, and, like, so far I've liked everything I've seen them in. I don't know, feels lively to me and a comfortable watch. That, I don't know. I've remembered as being just like a solid movie of like, I can put this on and I will enjoy it.
Yeah. And did you enjoy it?
Yes.
This time around.
Yeah, there are some elements that I, you know, don't work for me and have aged poorly, but. And I think it still works for me. It still, I don't know, makes me happy.
Yeah. And you wrote about this film.
I did.
So I never read this essay, so I want you to tell me about this essay.
I took a gender in film class my first semester in college, and we got to watch this film, and I, you know, was super hyped. I was like, oh, yes, get to watch this movie again. And I ended up writing about it in a paper, I think, called something along the lines of Male Entitlement in Film. Essentially arguing that in a lot of movies, especially historically, there's, I don't know, kind of this trend that if a man wants a woman, then we, the audience, want him to have her, and that, like, we think he should have her, and that if she, you know, if she doesn't like that, you know, that's too bad. Like, it's very,
it's
like...
something to keep... We need to just keep trying.
Just keep trying. He's got to get the girl, you know?
Yeah. Like, at the beginning of Birth, the husband-to-be gives a speech about how he's been trying to get this woman to marry her for marry him for 10 years, and he never took no for an answer. And that's the happy story of how the happy couple got together.
It's not like a creepy thing.
No, it's just I badgered her for years, and eventually she gave in.
Yay.
To us.
Yeah. And very much that. And not the reverse. It's not like if a woman likes a man, you don't get that, oh, we should badger him, except in, like, Get Your Man, I guess.
Well, but, I mean, I'm going to talk about Dorothy Arzner in this discussion, but you go on.
But typically, you know, the Hollywood practice is if the man likes a girl, that relationship should happen. If a woman likes a man, it doesn't matter what she thinks. Like, she doesn't know what's good for her, is very much the argument. And so I wrote about Philadelphia Story, His Girl Friday, and Pillow Talk. And I like Philadelphia Story a lot more than both His Girl Friday and Pillow Talk, because in those movies, the male leads are incredibly manipulative and, like, actively manipulating women, mm-hmm. the woman to be with him. And then that's framed as the happy ending when he manipulates her and then she accedes. Yay! Like it's, and it's not, like, creepy.
No, it's played as romantic. This is a happy ending. This is what's right.
Yeah, and especially Pillow Talk, in which Rock Hudson carries towards the end. I don't know. Do you care if I...
Go.
Okay. Drags Doris Day out of her bed in her, like, I don't know, night clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Drags her out of her own bed forcibly into the street. And he passes a guy on the street, and it's clear that he just dragged this woman out of bed and is now carrying her, and she's, like, fighting him, and he doesn't want to be there. And the guy's kind of like, that he passes on the street is kind of like, fair. You know, that's, you know.
And that's a joke?
Yeah. Very much that energy of just, like, kind of like, he treats this person horribly, but then, aw, she falls in love with him in the end. And very much, like, trying to subvert the feminist woman, you know, like, the woman will, like, wear pants and be a strong career woman at the start, but she ends up with the man anyway. Like, that kind of energy.
I feel like for every movie... So, like, we watch Philadelphia Story.
Hmm.
You now need to watch, like, 3 Dorothy Arzner joints.
Yeah.
To atone.
Yeah.
No, the Philadelphia Story is better, but the first half really starts off like it's going to be another one of those.
Yeah.
Like... It is a movie about Katharine Hepburn, who I know from Dorothy Arzner's Christopher Strong, where she plays a no-nonsense pilot who won't take gall from anyone. And when she does listen to a man and that is telling her how to live her life, that's a bad thing. And that's the how you know that things are going badly. Like, nice. It's just, yeah, movie directed by and written by women. It has a different tone to these things. Whereas in this one, we have the same headstrong woman, and it is up to all the men in her life to run, to tell her how to run her life.
Mm.
We talked about this film with your mom. She has a very different view on this than we do. We kind of just spun in circles with her for a while, and she just kept saying... And I disagree with you.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, fair. She is coming at it from a very specific perspective with this film. That being said, people don't treat her well in this movie.
No.
Like,
and the narrative, to a certain extent,
and I would argue that, the tone of the film doesn't either. Yeah. It goes back to the scene with the dad, who is a philanderer, not a great dad, definitely not a great husband. Comes home and tells off his daughter that the reason that he was such a bad dad and husband is because he didn't have a good enough daughter.
Mm. Which is completely just, like, nonsense logic of, like...
If you had been a better daughter, then I wouldn't have gone off and cheated on my wife.
And, like, it would be, like, one thing to blame his wife for his cheating. Like, that would be bad. But to blame his daughter, who's, yeah, like, not even a part of the relationship, is just the most, yeah, ridiculous thing.
And Katharine Hepburn throws it back in his face and says, "How dare you?" And then the scene ends, and Katharine Hepburn has a moment of, like, well, maybe I should take a lesson from what he said, and maybe I should learn and grow from what this man said, and be a better daughter to my dad. And, like, whoa, 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 movie.
Mm.
No!
She is not the person who needs to learn a lesson here.
No. Anyway, and, yeah, and Cary Grant, I mean, there's Kittredge, who's just kind of a fool.
Mm.
Like, at worst, like, he's not... Your mom talked about how he's this awful person.
And
I don't know that he's awful.
I
thought he was awful when I misunderstood a subplot.
Yeah.
And I confused the newspaper guy kid with Kittredge.
Yeah.
But, like, he can't get on a horse. Okay. He is objectifying of Katharine Hepburn. Okay. But he's not threatening to beat her like Cary Grant is.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't know that he's threatening to beat her, but he is commenting that he has had
beat her and he liked it.
Yeah.
The joke, yeah, is that
I think it's he's, my interpretation,
I once had a keen interest in being a writer, aka drinking to excess and beating my wife.
I would argue that's acknowledging of a past fault and making a joke on it, not as I love to do that still. He's saying I once had a desire to do that.
Later in the film it's revealed that while I was watching this movie,
hmm,
and I was dreading another It Happened One Night, another Arsenic and Old Lace. Again, Arsenic and Old Lace, fantastic comedy, terrible romance.
Yeah.
It's the slapstick, all of the shenanigans in that movie, just make the dude single.
Yeah.
And pretty much all the problems of that movie go away. Just Cary Grant's treatment of his wife betrothed, I don't remember, is so awful it almost ruins the film entirely.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I'm watching, and every time something like that happens, I'm like, another check strike against this movie.
Yeah.
In the second half, this movie becomes a delight. Mm-hmm. Like an absolute delight. Why? Because everyone gets drunk, tired, and hungover. And the people stop acting like avatars for speeches, mm-hmm, and how relationships should work, and they become humans who have conversations. And it's so much more enjoyable. You're just watching Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn fall in lust with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm, you're watching Cary Grant, in comparison to all these other fools, actually be kind of the reasonable, sweet guy.
You're watching
Liz be a really compassionate person, the Jimmy's partner, reporter partner. You're watching Kittredge, maybe not the best guy though he be fair. Like, you know, you're not watching Uncle Willie,
yeah,
who is a sex pest, and that's treated as a joke throughout the film.
Yikes. Yeah, do love Jimmy Stewart bringing a bottle of champagne to Cary Grant, handing it to Cary Grant, and then asking him for a drink multiple times.
Yeah, no. Jimmy Stewart in the second half of this movie becomes the movie.
Yeah.
He becomes the reason you watch the movie. His, towards the beginning, there's a scene in the news editor's office.
Mm.
It's this huge room that is completely bare of any set decoration. And you just have this one wide shot of Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, and Liz. I'm forgetting the actor's name. Apologies.
Ruth Hussey?
I don't know.
I know the last name is Hussey.
Okay, then it's Ruth Hussey.
I think it's Ruth.
We'll just say Hussey.
Yeah.
We got Stewart, Grant, and Hussey.
Mm-hmm.
And they're standing in a line, And it feels like high school theater acting where they're all waiting for each other's to interrupt them. Mm. Like, it doesn't feel like it has that crackerjack dialogue.
Mm.
It feels like this is either a first take or a take after everyone's bored and tired with the material. Mm. And I'm just like, okay. Even Stuart isn't grabbing me. But by the end, once he's allowed to get silly, oh my word, his wee! The second half of this movie is great when it turns into a character drama and it doesn't become a character, what do you call it? Comedy of errors.
Mm-hmm.
I said it the other night that it feels like you watch Much Ado About Nothing's first half and Philadelphia Story's second half.
Yeah.
Because those are the people, when it's just people hanging out and having fun. It's when all the plot is happening in the first half of the Philadelphia Story and the second half of Much Ado About Nothing that it's kind of death because you're just watching people be cruel
and misogynistic.
And misogynistic, and it's not helping the story. It's, yeah. I don't know. It's like, we should be taking a lesson from this. And I'm like, no. No, we shouldn't. So, anyway. That's my piece on the Philadelphia Story. Mixed bag. Would happily watch the second half at the drop of a hat. Anytime.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever want to watch the Philadelphia Story again, if we can start halfway at the party scene,
yeah,
then I will be, yes, let us begin now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh.
You talk.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, yeah, there's a lot more just showing characters that are not Uncle Willy and like showing them interact without, you know, making speeches. About how Katharine Hepburn needs to change her ways or whatever.
Yeah, it feels, again, more compassionate in the second half.
And I think, like...
And less belligerent.
Yeah, and I think, like... I think my mom brought up, as we were talking about it, that idea of, learning to have compassion for people is, like, part of the film's, I don't know, arc.
That... Yeah, which makes us weird with its class dynamics.
Yeah.
Because it starts off with Jimmy Stewart, who's like, ah, I'm mad at the rich people for being rich, and ends with like, oh, I guess it's fine that they're rich. Like, the any sense of class interrogation kind of goes by the wayside in the second half.
Yeah, it's like you get to have all your, like, post-depression jabs at the rich, specifically rich women, so you get to have misogyny...
embedded as justification for,
yeah, as oh, we're getting one over on the rich, and by, yeah, that we mean all these poor men getting one over on the rich woman.
Yeah, so I think I said the other night that this is a movie about where everyone's taking on the woman so that they can take on the man.
Yes. Yeah, but we have our resolution that